in 1 hour installments.
I hate the poor people.
I went
to Rochefort, as I point out, as a draftsman. After about 9 months, I had an appendicitis attack. I went to Nesbitt Memorial Hospital in the area. I was working in an office located on Kingston Corners. And at that time, I mentioned Kingston Corners because a girl was murdered in that area, and the murder was never solved. But anyway, I went to Nesbitt Memorial Hospital. And that was a hospital where many miners were located in hospital, because I guess sponsored by the mining companies there for the miners. Anyway, after the operation, I was laying in bed there, my knees propped with a pillow, and I wasn't allowed to move. And because of that, I developed a blood clot. Didn't have movement for circulation like they require patients. Today, patients got a bed a day or two after an operation. They have to get circulation. And at that time, they had two interns in that hospital, and both of them were women. One was a Jewish girl. I didn't call that. So anyway, after getting out of the hospital, I went to stay with. I was rooming at the time, and so I roomed with the Weisbergs in Kingston, Pennsylvania. That was next to Wilkes-Barre, across the river from Wilkes-Barre. And the hospital was in Kingston. And I noticed something was wrong with me. I passed blood, and I had to go back to the hospital. That was an experience, too. I fainted on the bus on the way. I got there, and I had to get a transfusion. I got the transfusion, and I recuperated right after that very quickly. Then I got out of the hospital, and my parents decided I should come back home. I came back home that following September. I went back to college at Carnegie Tech, and Carnegie Institute of Technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished my education there. And then I got a job afterwards with the Corps of Engineers in Pittsburgh on the flood control program. There was a big flood in Pittsburgh in 1936, and they were looking for engineers to work there, so that's how I got a job
there. This is right after college. Right after college,
yeah. And then after, I was in the Corps for a couple of years. That was an interesting job.
What were you?
I was in Pittsburgh. Corps of Engineers.
Oh, Corps of Engineers.
Pittsburgh Corps of Engineers.
What kind of assignments did you have? What kind of assignments?
What did I do?
Yeah.
We checked on the river stages, and the rivers control the dams for the flow of water. Pittsburgh was considered probably one of the greatest inland ports in the country because it hauled steel, coal, iron, all kinds of materials across the river through Allegheny, the Ohio, and the Mon River. And in the meantime, I went on field trips with the fellows to check for rainfall to see how we could predict floods in the area, in the tri-state area. And after a while that, I was in the Corps about 2 years or so. I went to the Army during the war. I tried to enlist. I was all excited about going to war just like the other fellows because of Hitler.
Yeah.
But I was turned down the first time because I wore glasses. The second time I was accepted as a 1B. That meant a physical defect, and the defect was my glasses.
Mm.
They were pretty fussy at the time.
Could you just clarify the year?
What year was this? I was inducted October 1942.
And you worked with
what do you want to know about?
You worked with the Pittsburgh Corps of Engineers until then. For about like 6 years you worked.
The total number, I have it recorded somewhere, but I don't have it here. I worked for the Corps of Engineers, the total, including Army time, about 6 years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you were inducted October 1942.
October 1942, right.
And you had to go to training?
I had to go to basic training for it. I was sent down to Spartanburg, South Carolina, for basic training for 2 years, for 2 weeks rather. I said, and then I went to headquarters of the Army there in Spartanburg, and there I went to Fort Belvoir, Virginia, for a short time, and from there I went to oh boy, did I go! I went to.
You went to Virginia, to South Carolina, to Virginia?
And it's Spartanburg, Spartanburg, mm-hmm. South Carolina. From there I went down to Norfolk, Virginia. Mm-hmm. That's the place.
Then,
the name of the base there was Norfolk, Virginia, mm-hmm. anyway. And then from there I went to Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
Manchester, Connecticut, to an armory there. And I was there a short time, and from there I was selected to go overseas. The Antietam aircraft outfit. You don't want to know all these old details, do you?
We'd love to.
Without any aircraft outfit.
Yeah, we want to know your Army, your experience.
You do?
Yes.
Well, there was a group of fellows selected to go to overseas in any aircraft. I originally started as an infantry, and they marked the GI who looked over my record and was supposed to record everything. It was a private, and I had indicated that I had worked for the Corps of Engineers, by the way. Before I left the Corps of Engineers, I was working on a Moon Township Airport. That's mm-hmm. today's Pittsburgh Airport. I forgot to mention that to you.
Okay.
I worked at the Moon Township Airport, and that was the first airport in the city of Pittsburgh for military use. And later, after the war was over, it was converted to civilian use, and today it's the Greater Pittsburgh International Airport.
The old airport?
No, the new one.
Yeah, but yeah, it was the same, they just moved.
It's the same airport.
Okay.
That particular site for the airport had a very modern farm for cows, a dairy farm.
Mm.
It was wonderful. It was one of the best in the area. Big farm, they had it destroyed just for an airport. And when I worked on the airport, I did the... I worked in the office and also on the surveying part of it, you know, laying out the earthwork and so forth, laying out the runways and all that business. Anyway, then I went to the Army, as I pointed out. I was inducted to the Army, then I went to South Carolina, then to Virginia. Fort Eustis, Virginia. That was the name of the place. Fort Eustis, Virginia.
Okay.
And then Fort Eustis, I went to Manchester, Connecticut, and then to Fort Belvoir, and then to Fort Belvoir. Well, I went to so many different places. Hello, Ephraim. Hello, Ephraim.
You're in big trouble.
Where did I leave off?
Manchester.
I went to Fort. From Spartanburg, I went to Fort Belvoir, Virginia.
Okay.
Fort Belvoir, Virginia Engineer Corps. I went down to Fort Eustis in Virginia. And then from there, I went to Hartford. No, it was outside of Hartford, a place called Manchester, Connecticut. And the reason I went from one place to the other is because I had a high IQ, which I didn't appreciate at the time, and I was a graduate engineer, and they were trying to place me in a position that I was most fitted. And I traveled by myself, usually soldiers traveled in a group and they stayed within the same group all the time. But I was always separated from the group, many groups. I traveled as an individual. I was a special character. So then I remember when I was at Hartford, Manchester, Connecticut, I went to some little party, a Jewish group asked me to go to a little party on a Saturday night. I got up late that next morning, and someone says, "You're one of the officers. This was an armory." What the heck's going on now? I came in late. I overslept. I should have been in the office on my job. So this is something I always remember. So the captain in charge says to me, "How'd you like to go overseas?" In combat. I'd love to. And just after me, there's a big Polish guy, 6 foot tall, was asked the same question. He started making all kinds of excuses. He was scared silly. He didn't want to go, and I was dying to go. I didn't want to die, but I wanted to go. So I finally wound up in some group were being assembled to go overseas, and they were being checked. And these boys, they were just high school graduates, I guess. They didn't have the background I had. And we were interviewed by a group of officers sitting at the table, and I can remember them saying, "Now, don't think of us as officers, just say what you want." Well, they said the wrong thing to me. And I told them what I thought of the Army, I thought of what I thought of them. I said I was very patriotic and I wanted to join. And then when I get in the Army, I see these kind of officers that don't know anything, and it's one big mess. I told them the truth. And there was one boy there who later on told me, he says, "G.I., they want to throw you the heck out of there." He said, "But they couldn't do it because a man in charge was C.G. Patterson, who was a colonel from the West Point, who saw my record. He wasn't there at the time. He says, he wants me because I had the record, I had the background." So I remained. And then finally we went overseas. Before we went overseas, though, we were like in Camp Shanks. We assembled Camp Shanks, New York. And that turned out to be a disgrace, that area, because I found out later, at the time I was there, we had practically nothing to eat. We went to the...
I'm sorry.
Well, where did I leave off?
C.G. Patterson, he wanted you, and you then were assembled.
And then we went to Camp Shanks in New York. It was across from Governor's Island.
Oh, yeah,
New
I remember
York.
That.
And there was practically nothing to eat, believe it or not, in an Army camp. We were there for a couple of days and just, we were assigned to a barracks. We couldn't leave the barracks. We had to stay within the barracks. And we went to the mess hall to eat. There was practically nothing to eat. Some of the boys went to a PX, which is a little one-story building, and in minutes, everything was bought up, all the food. Mm-hmm. And we found out later, it was a year or so later when we were overseas, that the officers who were stationed in that camp were doing black market business. They were selling the food.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, hard to believe, but it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. This was
so then we left New York by boat. We went to, on the Queen Elizabeth, it was October 12th, 1943, had to be a year later. I remember October 12th because that was Columbus Day.
And
we zigzagged across the ocean for 5 days, and we went to Scotland. I didn't say it right, don't I? Scotland. And we wound our way, like, truck to Bristol, England. Bristol is a port, seaport town due west of London. And I was there for about 9 months in Bristol, England. And there, it was, the war was on in Europe, but it didn't affect us much at the time. And I was able to visit different places on the weekend. I went to these different castles and visited pubs and in famous places like Bath, Bath, B-A-T-H. You've heard of Bath? It's in a couple other places I can't recall offhand. It was quite an education. And I wrote about these things to my family, and I didn't realize it then, but I found out later that the letters I wrote were distributed to the neighbors or whatever I wrote. Of course, there was censorship, and I had to be careful of everything I said. And finally, we were trained for the invasion. And that invasion took place on the 6th of June, 1944. I said 44, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was it, I think, yeah. And
that was the invasion of?
Normandy, France. Normandy, France. And our boat left Southampton. I was on a flagship, I remember that. And we were crossing the English Channel, and I didn't land on D-Day, but I landed at D plus four, that's what they call that. It was 4 days after the initial invasion. And we were on the flagship, and I remember the ship on our right, they were LSTs. It was hit a mine and sank, but we kept going on until we landed on beach of Normandy, and that particular beach was a disaster for the first wave of soldiers. They had gun emplacements in the cliffs there, and the Germans didn't expect them, but even so, about 5,000 soldiers died in the invasion. When we landed on a beach and we went inland, under some trees and set up our site there. And we were there for, June 6th, June 10th, until about the 25th of June, I recall, I was standing out in the field. I see a wave of airplanes coming over. When I say wave, it was just the sky was just covered with airplanes. We were in Normandy, and we didn't move because the Germans had occupied the area, and we couldn't advance. And there were swamplands around in the area called Carentan, C-A-R-E-N-T-A-N. And we had landed in a place called Grande Camp, G-R-A-N-D-E-C-A-M-P. And this is right adjacent
Carentan.
So this wave of airplanes came over to bomb Carentan to make a path for us to move. And the first wave I saw the airplane just dropping, just vertical drops. They were shot down by anti-aircraft by the Germans. But after the first wave, they kept moving in, moving, no, nothing stopping them. They just bombed the completely. I deleted the word, you know. Now, after that, then we start moving. And I can recall how devastated the area became from the bombing. Trees were just cut as though they had a knife just sliced right through the tops of the trees. You could see the dead cows with their bellies extended, legs sticking up in the air. There was a locomotive with a front just blown out, like just in the shredded wheat. And there was a picture of it in newspapers all over the country after that, I remember that. Then we start moving. And we moved from town to town. We were in one town one day, and we moved the longest. And we had a picture tent everywhere we went and lived in the woods. We had no contact with civilians. And the only time we ever stayed more than one day was one time we were there, about 3 days in the woods. Until finally we advanced into Spa, Belgium. That was the only time we went indoors. We were there in Spa, oh, I don't recall Jack, how long, but I can give you an idea. I was taking care of the mapping, and I would take a plastic sheet and go into the map room, a secret map room, and mark down the front line and the location of our units, different units. And then one day, this is a little surprising what I tell you. I come back to the fellows and I said, you know, things look bad. And there's one little area here, it's not protected by our soldiers. It looks like the Germans can advance in this section into our area. Of course, who am I to talk this way? I'm just another GI. I was a staff technician, third grade, staff sergeant. That's what amounted to. Something else I had to tell you. When I was in Normandy, where I was in the forward echelon. When I landed in Normandy, I was in the cult, the forward echelon. Now, this echelon was composed of different units of the Army for tactical purposes. They had the anti-aircraft, they had the engineers, the intelligence, the electrical people, everybody. In a little bit of a headquarters, just, you had 20 enlisted men in our anti-aircraft group and 10 officers. That was anti-aircraft alone. And that, it was typical of all the other units that formed the headquarters called the forward echelon. There were four units that moved right with the front. We were always on our front lines. I had mentioned that. Anyway, the colonel in charge of the engineers somehow heard about me being an engineer with anti-aircraft. And he called me over to interview me. And he wanted to know if I would like to receive a commission, an officer's commission in the field. So I was pretty arrogant by that time. Nothing bothered me. I didn't give a hoot for nothing. Because under those circumstances, you don't know if you're going to live from day to day. Because while I was in Normandy on the beachhead, we had flights by Germans who dropped flares at night and would bomb us, you know. So who cares about anything? That was the attitude you develop after a while. So I was called over by this colonel. He said, would you like to become a commissioned officer with the engineers in the forward echelon? I said, my try to enlist them. They turned me down. I had a background as an engineer, and then the GI puts me down as a draftsman, and then they put me shifting around from one place to the other. And I said, I lost respect for the Army. And I said, you know what they can do with that commission? I wouldn't tell you how I said it, but I told him they can shove it. And he looked at me, I never forgot this, he looked at me shocked. I'm the GI talking to a colonel, you know. He said, you know something? I said, you want me to go to the front lines and work on airfields, build airfields and have my head blown off? And I told him what I thought of it. So he looked at me shocked. You know something? You're right. And that was it. And that was the best thing I ever did. They ignore it, you know. So he removed my outfit and I took care of the mapping. That's why I told you I went to the secret map room while we were in Spa, Belgium. And when I came back that one day, I said, you know, things look bad. On this plastic, all you saw was just marks that you had to put on a map to see what it meant. See what I mean? So I said, oh, you're crazy. I said, maybe I'm crazy. But the next day I went back, and I said, the troops are going to go through, had a bulge in it. And I said, you know, there's a bulge here. You hear that word, metal bulge? I said, you know, there's a bulge here. It doesn't look good at all. And we were in the attic room, and Spa, Belgium is a resort town. They had that's where they got the name. They had a big casino there, a block square. The rest of the town, just a little town. That's all it was. And we stayed in one of the so-called hotels, two-story hotel, an attic. We were living in the attic. And the officers were on the second floor and the first floor. And I started stuffing my duffel bag with my equipment, clothing. I still remember my father sent me a pair of bedroom slippers. Of all things, bedroom slippers. Bedroom slippers. I threw that away and a few other things I couldn't stuff in my barracks bag. I was ready to leave. And nothing happened that day. But the very next day, all hell broke loose. You could see the German tanks down the road, and our P-47s bombing them. And one P-47 had a loose bomb in its rack, and he just dumped it over the hill behind our building. And then next thing you know, we had destroyed a lot of our papers, burn them, and we had to get in our trucks and start retreating. And we started retreating in these trucks, and we had to use our lights. And then everything was blackouts at that time. And we were bumper to bumper retreating. We finally wound up in Tongres, Belgium. And I can still recall, it was a fogs and people didn't know what was going on. And there was a little hut, I didn't know what it was, and I just looked like a good place for protection to sleep overnight. And I was exhausted. I'd go into this place. It was about the size of this room. I didn't know what it was. And I slept on the ground and it turned out to be cobblestones. I woke up with a cold. And that place was a little place for waiting for a bus or a car or something. You know what I mean? I don't know what it was. But the next night we stayed in, next door across the street was a hotel of some kind. Can't remember much about it. But there was glass in this one area, like a little social area. Glass walls all around it. We'd line up our duffel bags as a barricade in case a bomb would hit the glass and explode. So nothing happened that night. We got up, we got in our trucks and went north, headed north. I think that's where we headed. We went to Tongass. There's another hotel adjacent. They're small hotels. No, they weren't big. And we found out later one of the buzz bombs that was, you've heard of buzz bombs, V1, V2s. There were German bombs that came across. It was the initial stage of today's missiles. That one of them dropped on his hotel and killed some officers who were staying there. So they had the nice quarters, we didn't. Now these buzz bombs were something, were directed, they were little missiles directed by a little box within, and this box directed the azimuth and the distance. And while I was going overhead, there was a terrible noise like a locomotive. As soon as the noise would stop, the missile would drop. And when, as long as we heard that, and you'd see a ball of flame coming out of the rear of it, and as soon as that thing would stop, then we got scared. But as long as it continued, it went over our head. And one area that took a terrible beating was Le Havre. And a lot of missiles were sent over there to destroy the seaport and all the equipment that was coming in. And the Germans were very successful with that. That was a forerunner of today's missiles. I could tell you more about that. I'm skipping so much. What else do you want to know?
So that area that you said that was unprotected, that's where the Germans...
That was the Bulge. Yeah. Then it became famous for known as the Bulge, and we had to leave. Now, before that Bulge started, I told you I was in Spa, Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of soldiers came there because of this casino. They showed them movies there, and different USO entertainers came there for the French soldiers who were relieved for a while, and they got a little bit of entertainment. And I heard stories about our Jeeps are being stolen. We couldn't understand. I had Jeeps being stolen by the soldiers. And we found out later the Germans, disguised as American soldiers, were stealing our Jeeps. And that's where you heard stories later on, I think, about retreat and the German soldiers were directing traffic, and they were turning signs around, confusing everybody, and everybody was suspicious of the other. And the only way you could find out who the soldiers were by asking questions in American dialogue, like who are the Yankees? That was a baseball team. The American soldier wouldn't know that kind of language. That's how we were able to determine who was a soldier and who wasn't. I mean, American soldier. All those things were crazy things.
So the Germans got in, they invaded that area that you said that was unprotected. How were they able to get in? They just...
How'd they get in?
Yeah.
Well, the first story I heard was one night. Some officer came into our place. I was in Spa, Belgium, and he was scared silly. He said some soldiers came in and captured about 150 of our men and lined them up and shot them. And this soldier was an officer who came in, and the officer was always behind the front line. They would let the troops go ahead of them, and they escaped. And we heard about that, and that's where they start moving in on us, and they broke through the lines. That's a different fight. And then we had a retreat. And then, as I told you, we retreated. We finally wound up north in Boston, Tongass. Another unit was south. The German soldiers just split the ranks. Our soldiers were north and south of them. And there was an area in the center called Bastogne. You ever hear of Bastogne?
Yeah, France.
That was the area where they were surrounded by German soldiers, and Makalev, he was a general, and he was told to surrender, and he told them, "Nuts to you." That was his famous expression. Mm. You ever hear that one?
Mm-hmm.
That was it then. And finally, our troops were reinforced, and they surrounded the Germans, defeated the Germans. That was the turning point of the war. And from then on, we started moving into Germany. We went over the Kolin River into the Autobahn, and I finally wound up in Weimar, Germany, at the German Republic, and then the war was over. And I can still remember, I don't know exact date, but we got Eisenhower jackets, and we saw on our way home.
Mm.
And I remember April 12th, a bright sunny day, beautiful day. It's this time of the year, April 12th, 1945, we found out that President Roosevelt died.
Mm-hmm.